Desert Island Discs. Each week, a well-known person is asked the question, if you were to be cast away alone on a desert island, which 8 gramophone records would you choose to have with you? As usual, the castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? It's my 500th program in the series Desert Island Discs. Well, there are days when I think I could stand up frightened with snakes. And I think that's about all. I have a creepy thing about reptiles. Very foolish, very silly. I'm sure some snakes are charming, but I don't want them.
Have you studied music at all? Do you play an instrument?
No, I used to have to learn the piano when I was a small boy, but everyone begged me to give it up when I reached the age of 10, and I was quite willing to abandon the whole thing.
Do you play the gramophone a lot?
I play the gramophone pretty constantly, all the weekend anyway.
What is your plan of campaign for choosing these 8 records that might have to last the rest of your life? Is it a nostalgic choice?
I suppose so, in a way, but I didn't look at my gramophone records. I thought the best thing to do would be to remember half a dozen records or so which I play constantly and fond of, and through those that I've kind of coming through others.
Yes, what's the first one you've chosen?
I've chosen some Gregorian chant, 3 Compline hymns sung by the monks of St. Pierre de Solaine in the center of France. I'm very fond of Gregorian chant, and about 3 or 4 years ago, I had a chance of going to Salem and hearing monks sing. There's also an off branch in the Isle of Wight, which sings with the same purity that they do. And so my first choice is these 3 hymns, which are evening hymns for the setting sun and for protection during the night.
Compline hymns sung by the monks of the Abbey of St. Pierre de Solaine. What's your second choice?
A piece by Fauré, Sonata No. 2 in G minor, the second movement. I've chosen this because I find him very civilized and gentle and soothing and cool, all of which I might find necessary either to remind myself of the past or to quieten my spirit on my desert island.
Beginning of the second movement of Fauré's Sonata No. 2 in G minor, played by Monique and Guy Fallot. Some biographical questions, Sir Alec. You are a Londoner, aren't you?
Yes, I was born within the sound of Bow Bells.
Was there any precedent for the theatre in your family?
None at all.
Did you see a lot of theatre as a child?
Well, I think the first show I went to when I was about 5 was Chu Chin Chow, and then I started going to the theatre from about 9 or 10 on, and fell in love with everything I saw when the curtain went up, you know.
Yes. Was the theatre your first job when you left school?
No, I went into an advertising agency as a copywriter and layout man.
What sort of products did you write about?
Razor blades and radio valves and lime juice, as far as I can remember. They stick in my mind mostly.
Looking back, do you think you were good at it?
No, I know I was very bad. And as a layout man, I very firmly remember the day when I ordered a 4-foot by 4-foot block instead of a 4-inch square one. They didn't sack me for that, but they might easily have done it.
Why did you give it up?
Well, I got a scholarship to the Fay Compton Studio of Dramatic Art, and I'd always wanted to be an actor, so I said goodbye to advertising. And
what was your first professional appearance?
Virtually a walk-on and understudying a line in a play called Libel at the King's Theatre, Hammersmith, which then transferred to the Playhouse, for which I was paid 12 shillings a week.
And your next engagement?
Then I went into a play by Noel Langley called Queer Cargo, in which I understudied the 6 leading men and walked on and had a line to say as a Chinese coolie and an English sailor and a French pirate, and I think I picked up £3 a week for that.
And after that?
Then I got my first proper job with Gielgud playing Osric in his Hamlet at the New Theatre, and stayed with him for about 4 plays, and then to the Old Vic for a season, and then back to Gielgud for another 4 plays. Yeah. In fact, I owed my proper start to Gielgud entirely.
I believe you played Hamlet at the Old Vic when you were only 24.
Yes, in 1938 in Tyrone Guthrie's Modern Dress production.
So you alternated between the Gielgud seasons and the Old Vic until the war came along.
Yes, with one or two other things thrown in.
Yes. Well, let's have record number 3 now.
I've chosen Schumann's Piano Concerto in A Minor with Le Patti. I first heard this during the war in Algiers. In fact, I think it was the only concert I was able to get to during the war. I served in the Navy. And I went to the concert hall, and the French had doubly sold the seats. I mean, I had a ticket there, but they'd sold twice as many seats. So fighting broke out in the middle of the concert. So it's always stayed in my mind. Very firmly.
The opening passage of Schumann's Piano Concerto in A Minor, played by Dino Le Patti, with the Philharmonia Orchestra conducted by Herbert von Karajan. Well, picking up on your career, Sir Alec, you spent the war years in the Royal Navy. In 1946, I remember, you went back to the Old Vic, and you made your first film, Great Expectations. How was it you'd never worked in films before?
Well, I'd never wanted to. I was in love with the theatre, and rather turned up my nose at films, I think. And I'd also, some years before, done a couple of days as a crowd artist and hated that. And I thought, well, I'll wait for the film to come along with a part which I know something about. And that happened to be Great Expectations.
Yes. That film was more or less based on a stage adaptation you'd written yourself some years before.
I wrote an adaptation of Great Expectations in which I appeared and which David Lean saw, and he finally made the film.
Mm-hmm. It was the first of many memorable screen performances. We remember Fagin and Oliver Twist, the 8 or was it 10 parts in Kind Hearts and Coronets, the Lavender Hill Mob, the Bridge on the River Kwai. Which of your films have satisfied you most? Which were the most rewarding?
Well, I don't think I get much satisfaction out of any of them. Once I've
appeared in them, they're dead, as far as I'm concerned. But I suppose The Bridge on the River Kwai was the most successful, in fact, easily the most successful of the films I've appeared in, and therefore I have a regard for it.
Despite obvious financial blandishments, you've never allowed yourself to become a film actor. You've always insisted on time off for the theatre.
Well, I think it's good for an actor to contact a live audience and also for him, technically, to fill his lungs with air and do some shouting now and then.
We remember particularly, since the war, T.S. Eliot's The Cocktail Party, and your own production of Hamlet, which was perhaps rather too unconventional for some of the critics.
I'm talking about my disastrous one in 1951, I'm not going to follow that up. It was my own fault.
Will you have another go at Hamlet?
No, I'm too old.
Oh, surely not. There are many precedents.
Well, I know that some actors of 70 have creaked onto the stage and done it, but it's a young man's part and a young man's ambition, and I'm certainly retiring from the list on that.
Are there any parts you particularly want to play for which the opportunity hasn't yet arisen?
No, I wouldn't mind trying on the quiet to play Macbeth again, which I once played at Sheffield Repertory when I was about 25, and I'd quite like to play Ulysses in Troilus and Cressida, but I have no particular ambitions, really.
Well, we wouldn't mind seeing them. Let's have record number 4.
This is a bit surprising. Buddy Rich drumming Barney's bugle. I first heard of this when lunching with David Niven in Hollywood, and Fred Astaire was with us, and they got to talking about drummers, and Fred Astaire said that, in his opinion, this was the finest piece of drumming he knew.
Buddy Rich, drumming Barney's bugle. So, Alec, when playing a classical part, Shakespeare, for instance, do you like to read back, to read what commentators and critics have written about the play and the way it's been performed in the past, or do you like to build up from scratch?
Well, I always have read. I think this is a fault of most English actors. We read too much about the classics. If ever I played them again, I think I would try and avoid it.
What about an historical character like Lawrence, for example? Did you build up your portrait from the literature about him and talks with his friends, or build up your own conception from the text of the play?
Well, I'd read quite a bit about him before I read Mr. Rattigan's play, so I had a conception of the man there. I would say that most of what I'm doing in Ross is a result of talking to people who knew Lawrence well.
Mm-hmm. You've always managed to avoid typecasting.
Well, if you've got large ears when you're very young, and obviously going to go a bit bald. You're not the glamorous, you know, juvenile lead, and you're forced into trying to find all sorts of other faces to put on yourself.
As one of the critics pointed out, you have a liking for playing men of genius and obsession. You like to play the lonely man, the odd man out, and you don't often get the girl in the end.
Well, I've been married for 22 years. I've got one girl in the end. But you can't expect the public to expect kind of elephant ears to be the sex symbol in pictures and plays.
To what extent do you believe you have to enter into a character at performance in the theatre? Do you believe, as some actors do, that all the emotion can be expended at rehearsal and the performance given on technique, or must you feel with the character at every performance?
Well, I wouldn't like to expend all emotion during rehearsals. I think that's the way most of us work, is to experiment emotionally and then try and, tack it down for performance. But on the other hand, anything can spark off a piece of emotion in a performance. But playing 8 times a week a large role, which the economics of the London theatre demand, means you can't feel your way, I don't think, throughout a whole evening. On the other hand, I do like to try and be in the mood of the character as I see it.
Yes. Have you any plans for the future when Ross eventually ends its run?
None at all. No, I've got a film contract to finish off, which involves me doing one film, but I've got nothing planned.
There are rumors about a film of Ross.
Well, I keep reading about them in the paper. No one's asked me. Maybe they're thinking of someone else.
Let's have record number 5. What next?
Haydn Symphony number 94, The Surprise.
Why?
Well, I think on my desert island, I'll need to keep my sanity, and I find Haydn very clear and soothing and sweet-minded.
Closing passage of Haydn's Symphony No. 94, The Surprise, the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Fritz Lehmann. What's number 6 going to be?
Some guitar music to relax with, a piece by Terega played by Almeida.
Capricorn Arabi by Terega, played by Lorinda Almeida. So, Alec, how do you feel about yourself as a castaway? Could you look after yourself?
Well, I've been a castaway.
You have?
More or less. I was wrecked during the war in a hurricane, 120-mile-an-hour wind and 40-foot waves.
From what?
From my little ship I was captaining, and I was blown from the island of Vis in Yugoslavia to the Italian coast. So, admittedly, I wasn't a complete castaway because, you know, I was able to wave to people on shore when I eventually crashed up against the rocks.
Yes. There was no question of taking gramophone records.
No gramophone records. Books I had planned. But I took an unexpected choice for me anyway.
What did you take?
Well, I had all the kind of classical books there. I rather prided myself on my library I had on board. But knowing that I could only slip one book into a duffel coat pocket, I took a little cheap paperback thriller, which I was rubbish, absolutely. And delighted I was I took it, because it kind of absorbed me when I did get a chance to read more than anything else.
Yes. Could you build a shelter?
I'm sure I could, yes.
Can you fish?
River fishing is my only sport.
Mm-hmm. Can you cook?
Simple things. You know, I can scramble eggs and make one or two rather odd puddings.
Have you any other hobbies apart from fishing that you could indulge on the island?
Well, I collect tropical birds at the moment. I have been for about the last 4 years or so. So I suppose I could do some tropical bird watching. I don't know, I want to collect them there.
Yes. Well, you're going to be all right on this island. The 500th castaway badge to be awarded is a first-class one. Let's have record number 7.
The Agnus Dei from Verdi's Requiem Mass. I think I've chosen this because I find it very lovely, and it's a constant reminder to me of my religion.
Beginning of the Agnus Dei from Verdi's Requiem Mass, the recording conducted by Victor de Sabata. Now we come to your last one. What's that going to be?
The Ray Conniff singers in The Talk of the Town. This is rather the equivalent of my paperback thriller in choice, I suppose. But I think it would remind me of all sorts of things I like. The skyscrapers of New York and a kind of life in the theater, which I've enjoyed.
I can't show my face, can't go anywhere. People stop and stare, it's so hard to bear. Everybody knows you left me. It's the talk of the town. Every time we meet, my heart skips a beat. We don't stop to speak, though it's just a week. Everybody knows you left me. It's the talk of the town.
We send out invitations to friends and relations, announcing our wedding day.
The Ray Conniff singers, It's the Talk of the Town. Well, there are your eight records, Sir Alec. If you could only take one, which would it be?
The Verdi Agnus Dei.
And every castaway is allowed one luxury.
I think I'd take a bottle of apricot brandy.
That's a very modest request. You shall have a case.
Thank you.
In fact, you shall have two cases. One book. Another paperback this time?
No, I'd take Milton's Paradise Lost. I've always meant to learn it by heart, and never really got beyond about 100 lines, so I'd have the opportunity.
Right. Well, thank you, Sir Alec Guinness, for letting us hear your choice of Desert Island Discs and for being my 500th castaway. And I also want to thank our producer, Monica Chapman, who's worked with me on nearly 400 of the programs, and I want to thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Well, next week we start the next 500. Until then, goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.